Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And so you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know, even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
But you say, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Any cover of anything, women in the business, like people of color in the business all together, like to celebrate it is iconic. Madam C.J. Walker's story is aspirational because anybody can relate to it. I think for so long, we weren't allowed to tell stories like this. We were told they wouldn't make money, nobody wants to see it, and to actually have Netflix embrace this project and that people around the world will see her story is amazing.
Are you kidding me? I'm completely nervous. This is crazy. I'm a writer. I don't do this.
These are women who are at the top of their game, and it shows a really amazing sisterhood, and that is the kind of empowerment that Madam C.J. Walker was bringing to the women who worked in her company.
Black women have insights that haven't really been explored yet, and I feel like we're just starting to get to a point where people start to realize that, you know, black women specifically have voices, very unique voices, and those voices are want to be heard, and I feel like we're hungry. I'm anytime I see content made by another black woman, I'm always just like, okay, I want to see that. What does she have to say? How did she do that?
Yeah, we're finally starting to see ourselves,
yeah.
Which is really important because that encourages you, you know, when you see someone who looks like you,
yeah.
That encourages you, and I want to see black women at every table. They deserve it, and we deserve that perspective.
And I wear this set every day.
Black women being able to tell our stories more, I hope also inspires other ethnicities, other cultures to tell theirs as well.
Yeah.
When we work together, we are stronger. I think this entire process of the Netflix series and all of the women working together really shows that Madam Walker's legacy is an enduring one. that women are still inspired by her, that they are inspired enough to work so hard to come together to try to make this production something that will inspire millions. In this production, her spirit is within the women who work so hard and all the people who work so hard to bring it to the screen.
It's Sharana from Payroll Weight. So today I'm going to be reviewing the Netflix limited series Self-Made, inspired by the life of Madam C.J. Walker. This series stars Octavia Spencer, who plays Sarah Breedlove, aka Madam C.J. Walker, an African-American female entrepreneur who built a hair care empire, making her the first self-made female millionaire. Just simmer on that for a minute. The first self-made female millionaire. Okay, not the first African-American, the first female. I just wanted to just reiterate that in case y'all missed that the first, the second, or the third time. All right. So I was pretty excited to watch this series just because this is one of the first times that Madam C.J. Walker's life is being brought out to our television screens this time. And so I think it's important to continue to tell these stories of trailblazing women, especially African-American women who have just done so much. And she did so much from being a philanthropist to being the first self-made female millionaire, just everything that she was able to overcome in her journey, how she took no for an answer and how she lived to see, like, her vision. And so the fact that she also helped build generational wealth for her family, I think it's really important that we continue to tell this story. So for those of you who are new to my channel, hello, welcome, I hope you stay. Essentially, I tell you what I liked about the series, what I didn't like about the series, and is it worth you binging or not? Is it worth the stream? Is it worth putting your eyes on this material? Because we have so much to watch. I would say such little time while these lockdowns, I think we got more than enough time than we would want. But going into what I enjoyed about Self-Made, I would have to say first and foremost, the performance from Octavia Spencer, she is fantastic as Sarah Breedlove. I love the presence that she has. I love that you could just look at her and just see the confidence and even sometimes insecurities. And I think that she's a very relatable character. And I think Octavia does such a very great job of just bringing out the emotions of what Sarah was going through as she's going through this journey, especially during these difficult times, especially when black women was looked less than even the black man. I think it's great to see what Octavia has done with the character. I think she was very well cast as Madam C.J. Walker. And also, too, I have to say that Blair Underwood, who played her husband, C.J. Walker, I thought that he was absolutely fantastic as well. And what I love about his character is you get to see a lot of different layers of his character, who actually plays Madam C.J. Walker's her third husband. For those of you who don't know, Madam C.J. Walker, she was married when she was 14. She was widowed Then she was widowed at 20, and then she married again. And so she's been through a lot so early on in her life. But for this series, it focuses on the later years of her life as she's building her empire. And so I think that Blair Underwood was a very great match for Octavia Spencer. I think that they have very great chemistry between one another. And really to get to see his layers as kind of this supportive husband during a time where women were not supposed to take lead, where men were the head of the household. I like that they really go in depth with, you know, kind of how he felt about kind of taking a back step. And also, too, kind of the whispers that he heard from, you know, his father, played by Garrett Morris, Cleophas, who is absolutely fantastic as well. I think it's very interesting to see kind of as the supportive husband, as we kind of see these different sides of him as Sarah, Madam C.J. Walker, as she continues to excel in building her empire. I thought that he was very multi-layered, and you really got to see a lot of different types of performances from Blair Underwood in the series, and so I really enjoyed him as well. Now, it was so nice to see Kevin Carroll, who plays Ransom, who was at one time the CFO, the CEO, a very trusted confidant of Madam C.J. Walker, who was very integral in helping her get her empire to where it is. It's so nice to see him. If you guys don't know, he was in The Leftovers, and also, too, he was on Snowfall. But I really enjoyed his character as well. I think that they had overall, for the most part, I think they had a very well-balanced, very well-acted cast. I think everyone had great chemistry with one another, and I think that they meshed very well together. I also want to give a shout-out to the costume design, Kendra Patterson. I thought the costumes looked absolutely beautiful. I love the colorful color palettes that they had with the different outfits that the women wore, especially with Madam C.J. Walker. I just wanted to give her a shout out because I just thought that everything looked so very well made, well tailored, well put together, especially during that time period. And also, too, because what would a TV series about Madam C.J. Walker, who built this empire on hair care products, on taking care of your hair so your hair can live their best life, where would it be without some good wigs? And so I wanted to give a shout out to Ting Feng Lu. She was in charge of the wig design for Self Made. The wigs were on point, you guys. I said, okay, hair, y'all better slay right now, because you know black wigs are under attack in television and movies right now. There's a lot of topic of conversation. And so when I see a laid wig, when I see laid hair in movies and TV series, I just want to take the time and give the shout out that it deserves. And I just wanted to give that shout out to her because I think they did a very fantastic job with everyone's wigs, everyone's hair. I thought it was really great. And then also, too, while I was talking about good performances, Bill Bellamy, who plays Sweetness, I really enjoyed his character, and I love that you get to see these kind of like the conflicting sides of, you see those or there are African Americans during this time in the TV series who are trying to better themselves, who are trying to better everyone else, and so they have these ideas, these dreams that they want to come to fruition, not only so they can help themselves and their family, but to help others. And so I like the contrast that you see in this series between Ransom and Sweetness. Even though he might not be on the up and up, kind of a little shady, I love how they both have the same ideals, and they want to succeed for their families, but they have different ways of going about that. And you also see it between Madam C.J. Walker and also to Addie Monroe, who they basically have a hate relationship. I would like to say a love-hate relationship, but not as basically like a hate relationship. But I love how they show the contrast between the two, still trying to have the same end result, but still taking two different paths to get there. And so I love how they portray that throughout the course of the series. And also, too, I have to say overall, for Self Made, it's a very inspiring TV series. I think it's inspiring not only to see a woman, but an African-American woman who had a vision and never took no for an answer and continued to follow through until she can see her dreams to come to fruition, even though when a lot of people before her could never imagine, could never fathom that a black woman could achieve so much that she was able to do so. And so I do want to give a shout out for keeping just the overall arching theme of just feeling inspired about Madam C.J. Walker's journey, everything that she had to overcome, everything that she set out to do. She pushed and she pushes. She never gave up, and she got to see her dreams come true. And I really love that that's truly the overall theme of the story that you will probably want to get out of it. Now, even though I had a lot of good things to say, you guys, we got a lot of problems with Self-Made. First and foremost, as I said, when we see this battle between kind of good and bad, especially with Sarah Breedlove, Madam C.J. Walker, and Addie Monroe. And so their relationship in this series was a little bit off-putting to me. And because of this, Addie Monroe plays a saleswoman who had this magical hair elixir that helps Sarah basically grow her hair back. She lost her hair. She was very stressed out. She took this hair elixir. She was able to grow her hair back, which inspired her to get into the hair care business. And so in this series, kind of Addie doesn't believe that she fits the part to become a saleswoman, to be able to sell these products, to be able to connect to women, because during this ideal time, the ideal woman was a very fair complexion, light skin, white passing type of black woman. That is the woman that everyone kind of strove to be. And so the storyline deals a lot within colorism in the first, especially the first two episodes, very heavily on colorism, and is really a reoccurring theme throughout the course of all four episodes of the limited series. But after a while, it became a bit much. And so for me, I found it a very off-putting to see these two black women going back and forth the entire series, especially because the fair-skinned woman felt like the dark-skinned woman wasn't pretty enough. And I felt that you heard so much of just the, you don't look the part, Sarah. Like, you are not the ideal woman that we want to market to. I feel like there's power in words. And when we watch series like this, I feel like we have to be very careful with the messages that we put out into the world, especially when, you know, young people are watching shows like this. And I felt as though that there was a lot of, you can't do this because you don't look right, you're too dark-skinned, or things like that. And I felt like when you could talk about colorism, and I think that it's something that should be talked about, but I also feel like there has to be balance. when you're showing the negativity, you still have to come back with the positives. And I'm sure people can say, well, the positive, Sharonda, is that she was able to launch her own successful hair care empire, became a millionaire, yes, but that doesn't mean that those feelings of being insecure, of not feeling loved, of feeling like you're too dark to be pretty, that you're you have too much weight on you to be pretty, I think that that still doesn't go away. And so I wanted to see a better balance of the negative and also, too, the positive at the same time. And also, too, because the series focuses on kind of the latter years, like into her hair care empire journey, I really wish they would have went back into kind of what happened in the beginning, like how she married to escape a abusive brother-in-law, of how, you know, she was married three times, and how it really, like, she was born to, like, you know, slave sharecroppers. I just felt like I wanted to learn a little bit more about her history and see a little bit more about also, too, what she was able to do after she became a millionaire. You're talking about a woman who lived down the street from Rockefeller himself. And also, too, she was a huge philanthropist. Even the government had labeled her as an agitator because she was very outspoken about anti-lynching laws. And so I wish we could have seen more about what she was able to do for the education system. There were so many things that Madam C.J. Walker did outside of just the main things that she was known for, and I do wish that the series would have focused a little bit more on that. Now, I got to get on Tiffany Haddish. So Tiffany Haddish plays her daughter, Layla, and also to her great-great-granddaughter, Layla Bundles. She's responsible for writing the book that inspires this television series. Now, I just felt like Tiffany Haddish was just playing Tiffany Haddish, but she was supposed to be this person back in, like, the early 1900s. She didn't have an accent. She talked just like herself, acted just like herself. The only difference was she was in a wig and costume. And there are things that she did with her storyline that I felt would have had a lot more impact if it was an actress who was kind of taking it seriously. And it doesn't mean that I don't like Tiffany Haddish as an actress. I think she's probably was her best in Girls Trip. But as far as her portrayal in Self-Made, I thought she was terribly miscast, that it was like a lack of effort that was put into portraying this character, someone who went on to take over the business after Madam C.J. Walker's death in 1919. And so it was very disheartening to kind of watch this character who was almost like this comical character in a very serious story. And I just felt as though that she didn't necessarily belong in this cast whatsoever. I thought it really took away from the television series. The parts that I had to watch her in, it was just very cringeworthy. Just like, why are you in this? I'm feeling like I'm getting two totally different vibes on what this show was actually supposed to be about. And I think overall, because of that, it kind of felt like a lot of things were added for dramatization. And, you know, when you get into, television series or also to movies about real figures, it kind of made me feel as though I didn't know what to believe was true and then what was just added for the sake of making this, like, a soap opera, to make it really engaging, just adding the drama to get people to watch. And I think that when you get into this is the first, like, story about Madam C.J. Walker that's coming to television, I think that we needed to take it a little bit more seriously than what it was. There was, like, modern-day music playing in the midst of, like, some of the episodes that kind of took me out of the time period that we're supposed to be in. I just felt like it was very messy. The writing was kind of messy. And even though we had these very fantastic performances, I think from what they chose to focus on in Madam C.J. Walker's life from a writing standpoint and how they kind of put the episodes together, I still felt as though, even though I enjoyed Self-Made overall, and I still felt as though this was an inspiring story about a Black woman who did so much, who accomplished so much in such a short amount of time, I just felt as though that there was something that was still missing. And it was something that I felt as though for the first time that we get to see this story come onto our screens, I felt that they could have handled it with a little bit more care. But those are pretty much my thoughts on Self-Made, inspired by the life of Madam C.J. Walker. Remember, like I'm telling you guys, it's still worth the stream. I still just had a lot of issues. That kind of makes me uneasy for those who watch movies or watch television as this is all facts. I would definitely tell you guys to do what I did. I went ahead and bought the book On Her Own Ground, which is the book that inspired this television series, just to kind of learn a little bit more about who Madam C.J. Walker really was, and just to kind of decipher, like, what was, like, real, what was not, after watching this television series. But those are my thoughts on Self-Made. As always, my name is Sharonda from Pair Awaits. And if you like what you saw today, make sure you hit the like button, hit subscribe, share this video with your friends, and make sure you hit that notification bell. And I love you guys 3,000. I'll see you soon.
Welcome to The Daily Show. It's truly an honor for me because you are one of my favorite actors that I've ever had the pleasure of watching.
Oh, my God. Thank you.
Genuinely, you are. And I'm excited to see you in telling this story as well, because you're telling the tale of an amazing black woman who overcame the odds to create an empire that no one thought was possible, C.J. Walker. Madam C.J. Walker.
Yep.
Tell me about the story and why you chose to create it.
Well, Madam C.J. Was a standard bearer in my home. My mom used her as an example for me and my siblings, because we were from very humble beginnings. And Madam was born of slaves, the first to be free in her family. And she was able to, as you said, to just achieve so much through insurmountable odds. And she didn't have the right to vote or really own property. She was born Sarah Breedlove. She became Madam C.J. Walker through marriage, and through her marriage, and basically in name, became one of the most powerful women of her time.
It really is fascinating when you watch the story, because essentially she made the Fenty Beauty of her time. That's what she did. Because here she was as a black woman who realized that black women weren't being catered to at all. I mean, something that surprisingly is still a story today in beauty and in products and in care. And she said, I'm going to make something for my people and I'm going to put my face on it, which was a big deal.
Yeah.
You show that in the story where people are like, oh, you see, imagine C.J. Walker, you can't do this. Why do you think it was so important for her to put her face on that product when so many said that face won't sell a product?
Because someone said that face won't sell a product.
Mm.
You know, I guess if she created the Fenty of her time, does that make me Rihanna?
It does. It does. It basically does. It really does.
Oh, you know, in all seriousness, I think she put her face on the product because someone said that she wasn't beautiful.
Right.
And I think she wanted to be beautiful in her husband's eyes, but when she realized her own beauty, that's when she became powerful.
It really is an amazing story of this woman who has an idea, overcomes insurmountable odds, is not a perfect person as well. And that's what I love about the show, is you showing us a human being who creates this empire. And people have had to estimate her net worth because of the time. There's no Forbes.
Right.
But some people estimated that in 1919, she had a net worth of $10
million,
which is a lot of money, especially for back then. I mean, it's a lot of money now, a ton of money back then.
Yeah.
When you look at her story, I would honestly be hard-pressed to not think of how many parallels you share with her in real life. Because, you know, you've been outspoken about the journey many black people, black women specifically, face in Hollywood, you know, the challenges of not just having work, but having control of your work, creating work.
Right.
You have now begun a journey of Madam C.J. Walkering through Hollywood. I believe you're creating, what, 10 projects as we speak?
Yeah, a few.
I mean, what has that journey been like?
You know, I think that you touched on something really important to me, because so many people have asked me, what is the role that you feel you're destined to play? And for me, it is producer, because not only am I creating opportunities for myself, but for so many other people who've been marginalized, whose voices haven't been heard, whose stories haven't been told.
Right.
And we just had such synergy with the diversity of women who were a part of this. And I feel very grateful that I got to be a part of it.
Before I let you go, I know that LeBron James is also one of the producers on the show?
Yes. Spring Hill Entertainment, Maverick, everybody over there, LeBron, they've been amazing to partner with. You know, when I was making my deal, we had reached an impasse with the studio, and I'm one of those people, because I told you, I'm from humble beginnings. You know, I need, like, meatloaf, some potatoes, some good murder mysteries.
Right.
You know, I live beneath my means, so that I'm not living in golden handcuffs.
Right.
And I can walk away from the negotiating table, mm-hmm. and I was prepared to walk away. And LeBron and Maverick intervened on my behalf, and we have to have that advocacy until women are, you know, treated fairly with regard to the pay gap.
Well, LeBron with another assist. Thank you
yes,
so much for sharing that story. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you.
I hope everyone watches this. Self-made. Inspired by the real life of Madam C.J. Walker will be on Netflix March 20th. Octavia Spencer, everybody.
Okay. Today's podcast, we're going to put some trending topics in here, too, but self-made. Self-made, the Netflix series review. I watched a little bit of it. I was up when it came on, like 3 a.m. my time, which would have been about a little bit after midnight in California, where I guess Netflix is based out of. You know, anyway, but I'm for the little bit I've seen, I'm gonna watch the rest of it like this afternoon, early this evening. I'll give my little comment on what I've seen so far. I haven't gone through the whole thing yet. We'll open up the phone lines, but right now I got to take a musical interlude because the dog is bouncing off the walls. It's a nice day, and in order to get through the podcast in peace, I got to let this dog out so she can burn up some energy. So we'll be back in less than, you know what, if you need to go get some coffee, hot chocolate, take a walk, go to the bathroom, do it now. Thank you. Okay, we're trying to get a guest to come on here too. Okay, we're doing a review, Netflix series review on Self-Made, which started today on Netflix. It's a limited series on Netflix. I've watched just a little bit of it so far. Now, it's, and Netflix does say this, Self-Made is based on the life of Madam C.J. Walker. It's based, and it might be loosely based, but based on the life of Madam C.J. Walker. So, and the first thing I would like to go in, because some of the people that have commented, like the lady that did her own movie review, and we played the audio just a few minutes ago. Once, and we talked about this yesterday, and we talked about this a few times on other podcasts over the years. She was not the first black woman millionaire in the United States of America. In a review from yesterday, and you can fact check this on your own online or in the public library or what have you, you had Bridget Mason, who started off life as a slave. She became a real estate tycoon in Los Angeles. She was before Madam, way before Madam C.J. Walker. You also had Mary Pleasant, who was a San Francisco Bay Area real estate tycoon as well. She was probably the wealthiest back during that time, and that she was way ahead of Madam C.J. Walker. Then you had now in this Netflix series, Self-Made. You have what's her name? The person that is portraying Addie, okay, in real life. That person was Annie, A-N-N-I-E, Annie Malone. But in the Netflix series, they don't use the word, the name Addie, Annie. They use the name Addie, A-D-D-I-E. Annie Malone. And well, I guess when you're doing these productions, people take dramatic license. Annie Malone was already a millionaire with a sales force, I mean a huge sales force, practically global. I mean, she had people in Southeast Asia selling her products. She had a school, and but the way they portray it, anyway, hey, I'm just glad they got something on. So, like I say, once again, it is based in Netflix. They cover themselves on this. It is based on the life of Annie Malone. It does not say it is an accurate portrayal of her life, but that's okay. Okay, I look at it as an awareness piece, because a lot of people don't know who Annie Malone was, and even the people that, excuse me, not Annie Malone, a lot of the people don't know who Madam C.J. Walker was, and then for a lot of people that do, or whatever name, like I said, just something like that, it's amazing with all these resources out here, people don't, but Annie Malone was not, she was one of the first black female millionaires, but in this country, but she was by no stretch of the imagination numero uno. Okay, I'm gonna play this Claude Anderson piece because I'm trying to get this guest on. I gotta call them up and patch them in.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You're gonna hang up being there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money and hold that money. And practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems, so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Okay, we're doing today, a review of the Netflix original. It's a limited, and I'm going to watch it all. I assume it's going to be on all this weekend. But I started to watch a little bit of it, then fell asleep. But after the podcast, this afternoon I'll probably do the whole thing. But on Netflix, the series is titled Self-Made. So we're doing a little review of it if anybody has seen it. I've seen a little bit of it. It's based on, and this is an operative term, it's based on the life of Madam C.J. Walker. Okay. And if you've done any kind of study of Madam C.J. Walker, so don't hold it, because, when it comes to dramatic performances, typically, particularly if something's based on a person who actually lived, they take dramatic license, so you might get, it might be 75% accurate, and 25% is pretty significant. But so it's the same with this. But number one, I'm glad that Netflix got this produced. Octavia Spencer, the actress Octavia Spencer, put this together. So kudos for her. And one of the things about Madam C.J. Walker that they did to have in this film is, and she started off, all right, the way it's portrayed in the Netflix series is that she started off, washing clothes. And she was washing clothes for Annie Malone. Now, Annie Malone, in the TV miniseries on Netflix, okay, the person who was named, the character was named Addie, in real life, that was Annie Malone, all right? But in the Netflix series, they don't use the word Annie. They use Addie. But in real life, Annie Malone was a black woman. She was already a millionaire before she met Madam C.J. Walker. She had a huge sales force nationwide and even internationally, even into Asia. She had all that going. She had a school. She was there. So she had all that established before she met Sarah Breedlove, who later became known as professionally as Madam C.J. Walker. Now, what's interesting about what I've seen so far, because I haven't seen the whole thing, is when there was a fire on her property. Now, this is Madam C.J. Walker's property. What she did was she essentially, according to, I'm going by what's on Netflix, she opened up a factory. And even before she opened up a factory, what she was doing is on her kitchen table, and a lot of cosmetologists do this to this day in 2020, she was making up her own blends and brews so she can have her own thing. So I guess she started out with a kitchen table factory, but then after the fire happened, she went and got a building and opened up a factory. Now, Annie Malone already had a factory. But anyway, so I'm bringing up the factory part. And this was a big part of them becoming millionaires. Pleasant Stephens, now you talk about factories all the time. Why is it important that we set up our own factories?
No, she called the pyramid.
Oh, wait a minute, he's on talking to somebody. Well, hold on. You know what? Let me go to Pleasant. You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, Pleasant. What's the importance of for people who have their own business to open up their own factory?
The importance is that they become independent. They're not dependent on anybody else, like we are across America today. They do their own trading. They do their own. They set the prices on the product that they produce because they know how long it takes, how much labor they got to put in it, and they can set their own prices. It's very significant. Like right now, we are at the mercy of somebody else telling us what they're going to charge. Or take yesterday, for instance. They just hiked the prices on toilet paper by $1 a roll here in Chicago. Nothing you can do to offset that. You know damn well toilet paper is not $1 a roll. But where are you going to go to get toilet paper if you don't supply it yourself? That's just an example. And you know for a fact that that's what I've been talking about on the Blog Talk Radio for the last 5 years. That's what's significant about being independent. The countries outside of America set the prices for us, and then when we get it, we have to pay whatever the price is that somebody decides they want to charge us.
True.
For the same product.
Right. Right.
So why are we so dependent? Because we haven't been taught how or why we should build our own industry.
You know, this,
it is very important. How are we going to pass this on to our kids and our children would see the opportunities that we've had in America to build our own stuff?
Right.
And what are we going to do? Lie to our kids? Lie to our children?
You know what?
The same
what,
way with insurance.
What's happening right now with this coronavirus globally? And it's two things I'm going to recommend people watch, not only this weekend, but go back, keep on Netflix and watch. You're going to have to binge watch this when you can. The series called The Walking Dead.
Hold
because
on a second.
With The Walking Dead, what happens is they have some type of apocalypse. It's a zombie apocalypse series, but
yeah, it's
what happens
the
is people, the government, as we know it, is local, state, federal governments, global, they don't exist. So what happens is people have to learn how to basically get the basics again. They have to learn how to recognize food, where to get food, how to forage, how to work with each other, how to build shelter, how to build communities. No government assistance or nothing like that. So I would highly recommend, I mean, it's Hollywood with the zombies and all that, but I would recommend watching the series The Walking Dead and, of course, with this Madam CJ, miniseries on Netflix, self-made, Madam CJ Walker basically had, I mean, she did it all without the government's help. So that's where I feel we're at right now with this coronavirus.
Yeah, that's where we are.
Yeah.
How much of the medication? How much of the medication with this virus have we produced to ward off the virus that we supposedly have? We are dependent on somebody else to supply the medication to get rid of the virus that they planted on us.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like, for instance, and I brought this up, and you know what? I'm gonna do a podcast on this probably next week. Whereas in some communities, okay, you're not allowed, and I gave an example in Tulsa, Oklahoma. There was a lady in Tulsa, Oklahoma that was growing medicinal plants in her front yard in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and that was against code enforcement ordinances in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And they made her, and if you don't follow those court orders, you can get locked up. And you have had people in this country locked up for growing food and or medicinal plants in their front yard. Okay. I don't like that picture, but like I say, you can go. But there are other places and other ways you can do that instead of the way of code enforcement. But you know, this has just started. We don't know how long this is going to go on. I mean, hopefully it'll be over with in less than 30 days. I don't know. My guess is as good as any. But people need to start thinking about that. You know, Pleasant is right. The educational system, the westernized educational system, as we know it, basically teaches us on how to depend on people and resources outside of ourselves. Because you can grow plants for medicinal purposes. A lot of people do, but a lot of people, if the CVS isn't open or the local pharmacy isn't open, they're up the creek. You know, the pharmaceuticals, that's something outside of us. Feeding ourselves. Toilet paper, all these things. Like I say, I'll give you an example. There are townships around the globe, particularly in Europe and Asia and Africa, that are over 2,000, 3,000 years old. The United States the United States isn't even 300 years old yet. I don't even think it's
200 years old.
Matter of fact, it's not even 250 years old. So the United States is like a teeny tiny baby, newborn. So you got societies around this world that, hey, if it's been working for 2,000-3,000 years, but anyway, we'll have to put, so now we're at the point, you know what, so what, you're a millionaire in the United States. You got restrictions on you now. All right, but what I think's going to happen, if the longer this goes on, and that's why I recommend watching the Netflix, the series that is on Netflix called The Walking Dead, is, you know, do you need dollar bills, government-issued currency, to survive? Do you know how to trade? Do you know how to grow your own food? If you got a bunch of tomatoes or carrots or whatever, okay, you got enough for yourself and your family to eat. All right, what do you do with the leftovers? All right, now you can go to a farmer's market to start one, but what if people have limited cash? Okay, you got to know how to trade. And that's what we've been doing. That's what some cultures have been doing for hundreds, if not thousands of years. But most of the people in this Westernized culture don't know how to do that. So it's, in my opinion, it's a new day where we got to get right back to the basics and learn the basics. You know, where do you get seeds? You know, because I'm thinking about Monsanto now. You know, now if you buy an apple, you know, a Franken apple or a Franken watermelon that has no seeds, what you gonna do? Give me something with some seeds in it. Anyway, Pleasant, your comments?
Yeah, buddy. There are so many comments that I have stuck in the back of my head. I don't know how where to start because I've been preaching about this for the last, for the last 30 years, that if we don't produce our own foods, we can starve to death at the hands of somebody else because they didn't want us in their garden, or they didn't want us in their truck paths, or they didn't want us in their cotton field. Let me give you another example. One example that a lot of us that has moved from the South to the North have experienced it, looking it in the face and didn't recognize what we were seeing. One is mules. How many mules that we used to see in the cotton field with somebody working and plowing the mules and producing cotton? When did those mules disappear? Those mules disappear because they become useless. What happened to the mules? They cut them up for soap and some other stuff. We may have ate them. Who knows? What happened to the mule? Well, follow the trend. Now, what happened to the black man that used to plow the mule in the field? And he now no longer exists either. How many men, black men, did you see walking down with a plow and plowing some mules or turning over the crop with some mules? So if you look at what has happened to the mule, the same thing is happening to black folks. Same thing. Under the rug, it is disappearing before your eyes. The mules didn't get an opportunity to get any reparation. What happened to them? That was our farming tool to produce a product, industry to produce industry to produce industry that we survive with. Where's our survival kit today? Our survival kit has moved overseas. That's where our survival kit is. It has moved overseas to do what? Get slave labor. Slave labor. Why do it have slave labor? Because they wanted to get rid of the unions because you was getting a salary to cut into their profits.
As a matter of fact, I'm not a big union fan, but the unions can't collect no dues these days. I mean, like I said, I don't know how long this is going to go on. The longer this goes on, it's not at that stage yet where every man for himself. But it's not at that stage yet. But I look at this as a global wake up call.
All you got to do is reach out and reach around the curve when it's at your door.
Yeah, this is I look at it as a global wake up call because I was chatting with a friend of mine that lives over in Asia this morning, and they're on lockdown, and I was saying, look, because they were talking about transportation. I said, look, 300, 400 years ago, 500, you know, people were traveling this globe 5,000 plus more years ago. I mean,
They were traveling this globe during the ice ages.
Right. They might have been walking or on some kind of animal. But man has always traveled the globe, and this is way before there was an automobile, way before there was Greyhound bus. So man's going to continue to travel. Matter of fact, it'll probably be best for people to get out and walk 1,000 miles somewhere. So, like I say, this whole thing is I'm looking at it as a way to get back to basics, all the longer it is. And then also for people who might have some financial issues, okay, during this downtime, because that's what I look at this as, okay, it's not the end of the world, but I look at it as this is downtime, and during your downtime, you're getting some extra time, and time is an asset. To that business idea that you have, this is a good time to launch it right now. Okay, you got some bills that you're about to get evicted or foreclosed on, or your car. Take advantage of this downtime that they have, because like in California, the governor of California issued a statewide order: people stay at home. All right, now. I was talking to another friend this morning. She lives in Northern California, and she lives on about 2 acres, 2-3 acres. She's straight. Got a stream that runs through her property. Got plenty of food, plenty of vegetation. She's in the gardening anyway, so she's not hurting. All right. And we'll probably bring her on next week as well, but. This is a time to take advantage of downtime and get back to the basics. Like I say, it's not a zombie apocalypse. Hopefully it won't be. But anyway, let's go to the phone lines here. We started talking about Self-Made, which is a limited series on Netflix. It's based on the life of Annie Malone. So not Annie Malone. I don't know why I keep on saying, you know, because Annie Malone was a millionaire before Madam C.J. Walker, but it's based on the life of Madam C.J. Walker. Although the person that represents, at least in this dramatic piece, Annie Malone, which is in the Netflix piece, her name is Addie. So anyway. 314. His call dropped. Okay, well, all right. Anyway, if you happen to see, check out the dramatic piece. It just came on today on Netflix. It's titled Self-Made. It's based on the life of Madam C.J. Walker. It's playing now. I saw a little bit of it, but after the podcast, well, this afternoon or early this evening, I'll go back and just binge the whole thing of it. But she opened up a factory, and that, you know, for people who open up a business, start a business, you might not open up a factory on day. Well, you know what? Actually, her first factory was her kitchen table. Steve Jobs, his first factory, him and Wozniak with Apple, you know, Apple products, their first so-called factory was in the garage. So, Pleasant, give us your take on tabletop factories.
Let me bring something to your attention. You got a factory right now at your disposal that was started, and they make coffee cups. Why don't give a little bit of history about the coffee cups?
Oh, well, there's a piece I play on here quite frequently these days. Yupa over in China, and they're a big factory operation. But they typically have assembly teams. On any assembly team, they have 20 to 25 team members. And they got about 60 to 70 teams are composed of 25 to 35 people. But on their coffee pot team, a team, those 25 to 35 team members might produce 700 coffee pots per day.
Don't that put you in the mind of picking cotton? Isn't that the same way that cotton is picked, bales of cotton is picked to make your clothing?
I'm taking your word for it. Because that, you know what, that's one business I think we should re-embrace. But we should be in control of it now.
That's right.
See, that's the difference. We need to get back into the cotton picking business, but be in the control aspect of it. But anyway, 314 is back. 314, your mic is open. Hello? 314. All right. Now check your mute, 314. If that's not it, then it's Blog Talk. Hello? 314?
Huh?
Can you hear 314, can you hear me? Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
All right, hold it. Yeah. You got a comment?
Yeah, the phone's been acting crazy. I'm on my cell phone.
Yeah,
my other phone is still getting that message. We cannot connect the number as dial. Please. You hear that ring? You feel another 314 coming in?
Yeah, I see the other 314. You want me to switch
that
number?
That one.
Okay, let me go to that one. And then let me close. Oh, wait a minute. Okay. All right. You there? 314. I went to the new number. 314, your mic. Well, you know what? I guess you might have to call back on the other one. All right. Well, I guess this is all. Well, this is Blog Talk, though. Sometimes. Overall, Blog, I've been using them for 6 years. So overall, on a normal day, they operate smoothly, but then there's some days where you get glitches. Okay, they hung up. I guess they'll call back. All right, so Pleasant. So that's an example, you know. So they got anywhere from 60 to 70 teams, depending on the product. So you imagine taking 700. One production team produces 700 coffee pots a day, and then you multiply that by, let's say, 60. That's a lot of coffee pots. Pleasant, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah, that's a lot of coffee. Hold it. 314 is back. Let me see if I can get them in. 314, mic is open. 314. Okay, I tell you what. 314, we'll do this. I'm going to close your mic and then press 1. Let's see if that strategy works. You know what, Pleasant, during this downtime, that's where I shall be thinking.
Well, that's where I'm spending my time during this downtime.
Yeah.
You know, I've been at this downtime now for the last shift. When did I go down?
Oh man, we met face to face last April, and that'll be the middle of next month. Let's see. I think I met you on April 16th, 17th, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
So the middle of next month. Now you were in good condition then. When did you? Last September, last fall. Last fall, basically, because I know they was, man, a solid 2, almost 3 month period of time, you were basically off of the radar.
Yeah, I were. Yes, I was.
Yeah, so that was.
I got another question.
Yeah.
I got another question while we're waiting on 314. The question I have is this. The medication that has brought me back to be on the Blog Talk Show again. Where is this medication, product of the medication? Where is it raised, and who's raising it, and who's harvesting it, and who's actually producing it and putting it in a medical form?
Right.
Are we?
No, well, like I said, the rules are, you know what, I got two friends, one of them, if I feel ill, and they've taught me some basics, well, I don't even have to call them on a lot of the basics anymore. Viata Robinson with Soul Purpose Healing on Sundays, and then she does her thing with Naima on Friday mornings. Then I got another friend, he's been on here too, I call him Dr. Phil. Not the one that's been on over, but there's a black dude I went to high school with. Basically, my pharmacist is the fresh food, fruits and vegetables. I hit three places: farmers markets, two, the fruits and vegetable section of a grocery store, not the frozen food section, but the where you can get the fresh fruits and vegetables at a grocery store, and a health food store. And then at the health food store, you can get some supplements. Like if I feel the cold coming on, I'll take me some garlic and some oregano pills, either one or two or in combination, and I'm good to go.
Well, before you get to the pills,
no chemicals and none of that stuff.
No. So we have to. What is that? That's self-sufficient.
Right.
So
I need to start growing garlic though. So I'm glad you brought it up because see, I'm depending on somebody else if I go to the health food store or the grocery store to buy that. What I need to get into the mindset is I need to start growing garlic and growing oregano.
That's right. Now, I hope to find this fall people planting the product that we are talking about so that they can harvest it, manufacture it, and grow it and manufacture it so that we can be dependent, we can reach across the aisle and pick up the medication that we need.
Right.
Not to discredit anything that I have been dealing with, the heart attack and the in this other operation that I've had. Not to discredit any of the stuff, because I grant you, my wife has been a wretchedness. I mean, she has been on point with every time I need to take my medication. For the last, since 1975.
And, you know, so, speaking of, you know, a lot of people, particularly some of these ladies, they might have these old family remedies for colds or flu or pneumonia.
Yeah.
My mother, who was a, by her profession, she was a registered nurse, nurse anesthetist, she gave her anesthesia. Her best thing for knocking out a cold, particularly a flu or even pneumonia, was something that she got from a lady sitting at a bus stop. And here, I'm going to give the formula out right now. She took some gin, honey, and castor oil. Put those in a container, shook them up, and then give you a tablespoon or two. And all I know is, for not only for me personally, but a lot of her friends who tried it, swear by it. Now, that's all I know. Now, granted, you can't go to the pharmacist and ask for that, but I'm just saying she used that on me, and she told that to other people. She didn't make it up or sell it. I mean, when she made it, was for family use only, okay? She told the recipe to some friends, and they made up their own, and it worked.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just saying those little remedies like that can work.
My wife got old boy that came from Arkansas that she go get her medication from, because he makes his own medication. And she will wait for a week until he get it made to go get it. And he's from Arkansas. And my pharmacist my pharmacist is my nephew, is my niece in California. Whatever I need that she can produce, she will produce it and ship it to me.
Right.
My daughter, whom I raised as a nurse so she could get in the professional end of it, she will come to my house and make it and give it to me. My wife will make it and off the stove and the countertop and make it and give it to me.
Right.
So my medication has brought me back from my heart attack, had me down so low. It was at 23, and now it is at 60. I believe my wife checked it this morning, was 67. So I'm in pretty good shape.
Well,
as you saw me when you came to Chicago.
Oh, well, yeah, yeah. We hung out that day, and walking around normal. We took that little road trip down to Hopkins Park and Pembroke. All healthy and normal to me that day. So, you know. And we had to do with you a series on that, because I had one of my high school basketball coaches, he was like, I don't know, 73, 74, 75, somewhere around there. He passed away. But he was a smoker. Now, he at least made it to his 70s, but I got friends who died before 30 and in their 40s and 50s, and I'm looking at the big difference is, and a lot of, they're eating toxic food or processed foods. So we got it because, that's part of this whole I'm not a doctor or medical professional, but we really had to look at what we eat, what we put in our body. Anyway, 3-4 teams back. Let's see. Let's try it this time. 3-4 team. Your mic is open.
Yeah, you hear me okay now?
Perfect.
I don't know what's the matter with these damn
phone lines this Friday.
We're gonna make some phones. That way we will have this problem.
Yeah, you know, what's the
I think we need to go back. I think we need to go back to the tin cans and the string.
I don't know if that's going to reach St. Louis now. But, you know, we need to talk about that because people did communicate. You know, it might have been slower, but, you know.
With a tin can, a treat, with a tin can, a treat, and a stand of wax.
I mean, you got ham radios out here, and anyway, Pianchi, because let's give you the floor. So, Pianchi, you got the floor.
Yeah, I'm a ham radio operator, KT0J. I think they should teach all children those things, and all children should have electronic kits so they can learn breadboarding and how components work and interact with each other. That's what happened to the innovative mind.
Bianchi, mm-hmm. Why don't we start that class? Why don't we start that class in that manufacturing and start to make some of those?
Now, when you say some of those, you're talking about ham radios?
Yeah.
Well, ham radios and also electronic kits. Kits is when you would get a lot of different components.
How adverse are you on those things?
Well, I'm a lot adverse on it, but I'm occupied now with things that I'm already tied up with, Stephen.
Well, before you get even deeper into this, all right, for the people that don't know anything about ham radios, and I'm limited on that, I had a friend of mine. Matter of fact, I got to call him this weekend. He was in the ham radios, because I met this dude in sixth grade. He used to talk about ham radios all the time. So, Pianchi, what is a ham radio and the purpose of the value of having a ham radio for communication?
Well, ham radio operators are. They are enthusiasts that operate a radio and communicate back and forth with.
Okay, so all right, so a person that's in, let's say Florida or St. Louis or whatever. Okay, now I understand the local part, but what if they wanted to communicate with somebody who is in Timbuktu? Is that possible? Because
radios. They have to have an antenna system. They have to have a radio that operates on a particular frequency. Like number two, they would have to operate on 40 meters.
Okay.
And that there is a cliche that people don't understand, but they could learn. But no, ham radio was operating. They was doing RTTY, which is radio telegraph. They communicate with Morse code. They was communicating on phone. This is what we're communicating on today is phone. This is amplitude modulation. They were doing FM, like your FM radio station, which is frequency modulation.
Uh-huh.
And I built a walkie-talkie. Of course, it was big because the mineralization came about with the space program. And once they started going off in that direction, it took a lot of kit builders and hobbyists out of the business because they can't see with the miniaturized circuits. And so I built a walkie-talkie that I could communicate back and forth on 2 meters. And I could 1974. I built a robot for my little girl that had infrared and it had sonic testers so it wouldn't run into anything. It would wake up in the morning. When it felt that its batteries was getting low, it would be attracted to its charger in the wall by signals and back up into it and charge itself. And when it was charged, it would jump off like a child jumping out of the bed. And it could talk. Pre-programmed speech anyway. So, no, those things was cool. I had a computerized van. I took out all the manufacturer's electronics and put my own in to control the lights, turn signals, had sensors for when the coolant got low, when the radiator got to a certain temperature, had trip computer that would let you know the miles per gallon you was getting, destination, ETA to your next destination, all that stuff that you have today on trip computers.
Okay. Well, now, Pleasant, you used...
I built my own color TV, a 25-inch floor model console.
Ooh, okay. Well, you got some skills. I guess you
built
were...
Built all my hand radio equipment, including the 2,000-watt amplifier using...
Did you have a subscription to... What do you call it? Popular Mechanics magazine? Or still have one?
No, I never. I read them, but I didn't have no subscription. My subscription is the QST, which is American Radio and Relay League publication. Matter of fact, I got one right here from just came the other day.
What's it called? American Relay?
ARRL.
Okay.
Along with the. Well, they're the rule makers. The FCC, of course, is the governing body. But they champion for the ham radio operators to keep from losing allocated spaces, allocated frequencies to commercialization and so on and so on and so on.
All right, I just found American Radio Relay League.
Well, let's put a charge on. Let's put a charge on him to have him to start manufacturing ham radios.
Well, hold on, please, Pianca, what were you getting ready to say? America.
He's more knowledgeable than I am about ham radios.
Pianca, you said now American Radio and Relay. That wasn't it.
Yeah, that's it. American Radio.
Oh, that's
and
it. Okay.
ARRL.
I got it. Okay.
All right, that's your mission. So when we come back on the Blog Talk Radio show, that's our communication system.
Yeah,
we got a directory here too. Okay, well,
he's up on it because I don't have that kind of information.
Now, Pleasant, how did you communicate on the road for those 30-some-odd years?
CB Radio, Channel 19, wasn't it? Channel 6, Channel 19?
Yeah. Channel 19. In the mountains, out of
the
mountains, anywhere you want to go. Yeah.
Well, I may as well jump in the ear, because I guess you'll meet people on there like you wouldn't normally meet in everyday life.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you don't find no black
people.
Kids in there.
You meet people that's at home in the mountains that you don't meet anyplace else. Remember, I told you I was in Pennsylvania, and they called me because my cousin had passed, and I grabbed it and I
yeah they sent you a telegram didn't they?
Yeah, and I talked with her. And I went on into New York, dropped my load, and called her back. I couldn't get her. So when I got back on the mountaintop in Pennsylvania, I called out to her. And she had one of those homemade things in her house.
and we communicated for a few minutes, and I lost it again. And I was talking to people in California. Out of Pennsylvania. Yes, sir.
All right, well,
they work. They work.
Right,
yeah, they used to. I've done that a couple of times. What it was is that ham radio operators in a certain city, let's say in New York, wanted to get in contact with a relative. Well, what they would do, the relative would tell them what city they in, and, you know, the service would try to contact a radio operator in that area. And they would take the message down, just like Western Union, but they would deliver it to them.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, this is what we need to do during this downtime.
Yes, sir. We need to make that. We need to make that thing over again. Bianca, would you take that charge?
No, Stephen, I'm busy. These days and times, I'm all tied up.
No. You want to have some downtime, brother. You can't.
No, I got to get him in. He's finishing his. He's
I
finishing
just
his engineering.
Let's just
his
run
business
with
is trying to become a pilot. That's the next thing that we need more blacks is to become general aviation, where they become private pilots.
Which is another thing we need as well.
That's what I'm working on.
All right, well,
on.
I got this American Radio and Relay. I got that page on bookmarking and another page on CBs. So that's part of my homework assignment for this weekend.
All right, y'all. I'll see you.
Okay, all right. Have a good one, Pianchi. Thanks for the information. All right, well, Pleasant, I'm going to let you close it out if you got anything.
No, I don't have anything. I'm calling you back.
Okay.
Well,
I'd like to say, for people who've got Netflix, check out Self-Made, which I'll probably spend the afternoon watching that. And I'll probably give you a call after that. So on that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.